Welcome to No Password Required, a podcast dedicated to showcasing the top personalities in the world of cybersecurity.
Hello and welcome to the No Password Required podcast. Today we're coming to you live from B-Sides Jacksonville. Thank you to the University of North Florida for hosting us. We're having a great time. It is a beautiful day, and we're here with friends. Speaking of friends, I'm your host, Jack Klabbe, and I'm a cybersecurity attorney at Carlton Fields. With me is...
I'm Serena Gandy. I am a cyber and communications analyst at Cyber Florida and the producer of the Cyber Bay podcast.
Well, Serena, you and I talk on the phone and over video chat. It's really nice to be with you in person today. Even better, too, because we have a very, very special guest today. So joining us is Gina Yacone. Gina is a virtual CISO at Trace 3. So, Gina, welcome to the No Password Required podcast.
Thanks for having me, and thanks. And hello, B-Sides Jacksonville.
So can you give us a little bit of your background and how it led you to being a virtual CISO?
Ooh, once upon a time, many, many moons ago. Really good question. I do not have a traditional background by any means. I wasn't born out of the firewall and became a firewall CISO or anything like that. I actually worked in Tampa, Florida at a law firm for over 14 years as a private investigator. And there I learned to factually work up cases, proving and disproving the legal theories of the case for the attorneys. Basically, I got to do all the fun things that the attorneys maybe didn't have time for, creating tables of proof and going and actually finding one, either witnesses for the case and or I became very familiar in digital forensics. That's kind of the technical aspect of it. And I, in that kind of tenure, I kind of learned how to work with attorneys, deal with attorneys, as well as the technical side of, you know, chain of custody and really social engineering at its finest. So it gave me a great pathway into what I do today. What I kind of specialized in the criminal defense side of the house. So we had basically high profile criminal cases, and it was kind of sex crime, financial crime, and kind of like that RICO and some other types of stuff. And so with that, I was always going to court. I was always preparing for, you know, kind of testimony and other types of things. And here's the thing is when you walk up to a door, no one really wants to talk about a murder case. Not at all. They don't want to talk about some of the other cases that I talked about as well. And so being able to, one, get people from an interview perspective to talk about really hard things is the same thing I do in cybersecurity every day. It's like, hi, knocking on your door, would love to talk to you about your vulnerabilities and all of the places you made poor investments in. So like, come on, let's talk about it, right? So you can't really approach a conversation like that. So I think my 14 years had really helped me in many regards kind of get to where I am and makes cybersecurity, one, conversational and approachable. I like to think of myself as funny. So breaking the ice in that way has also, I think, helped me.
Where did the pivot come from then? Like, how did you end up transitioning from that to the next thing?
Yeah, so my head partner at the time, he was in his 80s, and I was the last in-house investigator, I felt like, in all of Tampa, Florida. And while I was doing good financially, I had to think about what was next, and either I can open my own practice and or maybe go as a contractor to other law firms, but then I might have to do this thing called family law or, you know, kind of surveillance. And I never really had to do that. I was kind of the top of my game. So I was talking to a recruiter, and he was like, you know, you got, you know, somewhat of a technical background here with this digital forensics. You seem to be, you know, good with people. Cybersecurity does not have a lot of women. You can make a lot of money. Wow. And I never looked back. I started studying for my Security Plus right away and trying to figure out my options. And when I started in cyber, it was like 2% of women were in cyber. It was really, really tiny. Like women at this conference would have been like, it would have been so much different. A lot of times there was maybe it had been five of us an entire conference, right? No bathroom lines, no lines at all. You know, so a big, big difference to where
pros
we are
cons.
Today.
Pros and cons.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
Have you ever gone back to that recruiter and been like, hey, look, you were right. Like, look how I did.
Do you know, he actually got me my first job in cyber. So he profited from it. So let's be real. But no, I don't know if he realized, like, I mean, I've said this on some other podcasts. Yeah. I don't, for me, he probably doesn't remember saying those words like that. In my head, that's what he said. Like, he went, wah, 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 wah. I interpreted it as make a lot of money, no women in cyber. But, you know, he reaches out to me every once in a while, so.
Do you think you found your forever home in cyber? Or do you think there's maybe something else down the road? What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I really, really do. People that know me say I have a lot of passion, especially about cyber. And I do. It's kind of different. I used to help with criminal defense, and now I am, you know, defending our networks and things like that. And now I'm kind of on the police side of the thing, like the house in a way at corporations. So in a way, I'm still investigating, which is a great passion, doing a lot of research and writing, speaking at conferences. And I feel like I get to speak my passion every day. And also, it keeps me on my toes because cybersecurity, there's always something new. And even though I will say, like, hey, you know, everything comes back down so that we can simplify a lot of things. Okay. Every day, trying to understand the anatomy of attack or the educational factor, there's always something to learn, which is really, really intellectually stimulating to me.
I was just saying, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always so much to learn, I feel, in this field. Do you ever reach a point where it's too much, like, and you feel a little bit of burnout? How do you handle that, and how do you recognize when you're in that position?
Hi, my name is Burnout. I live in burnout. I live, I thrive in, I feel like I do thrive in kind of a little bit of chaos. I think that's working in legal for 14 years at a high profile firm has kind of always kept me high energy. No, I would say as I'm getting older, it's harder. But I say I live in burnout twice a year, like around June and around this time, where maybe I'm not as smart as I once was. But I do take vacations. This year, I'm also trying to become more healthy and more purposeful. I have spent so many times like behind logs, just going absolutely crazy, spending too much time on a project. Now, don't get me wrong, I pretty much do work 7 days a week. I'm always addicted to my phones and my computer and trying to understand what's happening in the world. So I do kind of live in this kind of area of burnout. But right now I'm trying to incorporate walks into my calendar. I'm trying to go to the gym. I solve world peace on my walks. Like, I really do. I'm like, I figure out how to fight the bad guys.
I have a pen with you to write it down.
Well, now I have this thing where I just transcribe it on ChatGPT to then create a memo and a structural plan with a project management plan, like, and change management. And I'm like, hey, this is how I solve world peace. Now create these action items for me. And now I have an assistant that kind of does it for me. But
so even on your walks, your brain is moving.
It is. But then that allows me to sleep.
That's true. You get to let it out. Okay.
That's true. Wow. It's true. Yeah.
You've talked about raising your hand and that having caused opportunities for you. Like, what is it like to live like that? And do you ever regret raising your hand for things?
Yeah, great question. This one is, I feel like I want to talk out of both sides of my mouth a little bit regarding this. I definitely raise my hand way too much. I get a lot of stuff put on my plate. I'm always saying yes. I'm always like, something is triggering for me to say like, oh, that's interesting, I'll help, or oh, I'll take that one more call, or I'll help mentor this person, and then my calendar is not mine anymore. It literally, I'm a slave to my calendar. And so that does happen a lot. And then I also think about the rewards that it's given me. So I probably wouldn't have grown so much in cyber without taking on the harder customers, the harder challenges, the more technical side, you know, spent the time on the weekends and stuff where maybe my peers were like, yeah, I'm not doing that, right? And I'm still grinding. I think that has helped me exponentially grow in my career, which is huge. Yeah. I would say, though, one of my great friends, Patty, just told me, you know, there's aspects of saying yes to things that help you get promoted in a job and things that you say yes to where then people start taking you for granted because you're always the person that says yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like I do live in that right now. Yeah.
It's all about the balance. There has to be a balance there. True. Absolutely. True. I know what I completely agree with what you said, though, about like the hardest parts. I feel like it always leads to the most growth in your career, professionally, like in life. I've definitely found that to be true for me as well. So you have a lot of different leadership experience in very different arenas, professionally as a virtual CISO and publicly as the vice president of one of the largest ISA chapters in the world. How do you adapt adapt your leadership style between all of these different roles?
Yeah, it's taken me a while to kind of adapt that. I would say, so I went to my first degree is from the University of Miami, and I feel like they just breed leaders. And I know that that sounds crazy, but they are always thinking like, what are you going to be doing next? Like, are you going to say something
bad? No, yeah.
Oh, it's like, you were like, we're not from that school. We're from USF.
You never always go, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I feel like with them, it allowed me to fail fast often because when I got there, I got into student government. I got into a sorority. I got into President's 100 and this and this and this. And by the time I finished college, I was like president or vice president of like 6 or 7 of the 11 organizations I was a part of. And I was like, but I say that it allowed me to really kind of start understanding people and understanding my leadership style, how to deal with conflict in a really low pressure environment. Mm-hmm. I wasn't dealing with, you know, real world problems. I was dealing with college problems like, oh, she drank too much or, oh, you know, we're trying to pass this bill for a palm tree, right? Like there's aspects to that where it is very important that palm tree needs to grow because our campus is gorgeous. But like there are some things to that in that I was able to learn people mm-hmm. early on that has helped me. I would say now, and especially because of being an investigator and being in cyber, the idea of social engineering becomes really kind of prominent, where really understanding your audience and kind of catering to that audience, understanding that messaging becomes kind of something that is an art and a science. I also would like to say I'm at an age where I am what I am and I am what I'm not. Like, not everybody's gonna like me. Or like, they're just not. And so I kind of, if you're a C-level or if you're an end user, you're probably gonna get the same me mm-hmm. to a certain extent, because if not, I'd be exhausted. But I do try to tailor the message and the communications way differently.
That's authenticity. I mean, you're yourself, you're being yourself and genuine. And I think that is good leadership, personally.
Fair.
What does it look like in your day-to-day life, choosing to like be authentic and show up that way in your leadership roles?
Well, it allows me to feel very comfortable with a lot of the decisions and the pathways that I've kind of taken. You know, if it was, you know, studying for a certain certification or doing a certain aspect or saying yes to certain things and then really kind of giving it my all, I feel because like I've let that like authentic self and especially like giving it my all that I don't want to say I don't have any regrets, but I honestly, there's probably very, very few that I could say like, oh, I might have gone a different path. Mm-hmm. But even if I went that different path, I wouldn't be with you guys today.
Yes.
So like there's that aspect of resigning myself to really appreciating the path that I took, the avenue that I took, and the person that I am. I would say sometimes I wish I did have a little bit more polish every once in a while. But it's usually I don't have the polish because I'm in burnout and I'm like, I just.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
You can only choose one.
Yeah. If I had more time in the day, I could be like, oh, I could prepare a little bit more, you know.
Oh my gosh, I absolutely love that. Okay, so in the beginning, you kind of talked a little bit about how when you got into this field, you were one of the only women like around you. And we know it's growing, it's changing a little bit, but there is still so much work to be done. And you are, I would say, a bit of a role model like for the women in this industry. But how do you... No. An inspiration in this, a young role model that other young people look up to.
Exactly.
And they're like, wow, I can do that because we're the same. Yeah. How do you balance like being yourself and doing all of these things and being authentic with kind of, do you feel like any responsibility to be like a role model and set that path for the women like following you?
Yeah. So I would say I wish I had more time in the day mm-hmm. to be more things to more people. But honestly, I do feel like I give a lot back to the community. I'm always helping with a resume or taking a half hour call to help somebody. I would say I have taken a little bit of a step back because I've seen a lot of people that use and abuse or feel entitled. I know somebody on LinkedIn, so please connect me with this person, or I know you can find me a job, or why haven't you found me a job? It's very like, you know, they kind of put the weight of their, very transactional and the weight of the world. And I'll say to them like, hey, here's your resume. Here's some areas where I would love you for you to tweak or things like that. And then they don't do the homework and then still expect me. So I'm feeling very exhausted with that. You know, I had somebody just recently and he wrote me this thing on saying like how he wasn't ready for a job yet because he's taking a little bit of break and he may start a nonprofit and he may do this, but, and he does, he's really intrigued by my company, but not sure if my company's ready for him. And then literally like, and he's like, here, can you look at my resume? And then 2 days later, he applies for 11 jobs at my company. And I'm like, what? Oh, I don't understand. Yeah. Do you know? So there's this aspect of like,
he's not reading the room.
Or like waiting for a response. And so, we're in a desperate situation too, right? The economy is weird. The job hunting is weird. And we say to network, your network is going to give you, you know, potentially your next job. So I get that people have that, but there are some boundaries sometimes that I would like
to. But it's gotta be authentic too. I mean, it's just like, have one ask. Hey, would you mind taking 5 minutes in the next month to read my resume? Don't ask for eight things. Like, it's gotta be a limit to what you can ask from strangers.
It is insane. I mean, I'm not kidding. I have people who, if I don't email them back fast enough on LinkedIn, they'll email my organization saying that I don't respond. I'm not kidding. It's very funny to me on what people, what they think I can accomplish in a day, really. I mean, I guess I'm kind of honored. They think I can, you know, do with the world. But I would say for that mentee-mentor relationship is, as long as you're establishing good boundaries and you and the mentee is also giving you their boundaries too, because you know, there's that give and take as well. And you're setting appropriate deadlines and you guys are talking through things and there is some of that, then I love to lean in and help. But sometimes I do just smile and nod and, and I'm like, you're not, I get frustrated.
I definitely would too. And I think people like that guy is maybe a great chance for you to practice saying no more. Just say no and set that boundary.
It's
and
true.
That must be frustrating.
I had a graduate student reach out to me the other day asking to learn about my career. And I was like, great, like this must be someone who's thinking about going to law school. I can answer some questions. I know it a lot. But I was kind of looking forward to it and also not looking forward to it. And then when I got on the call, turned out he was doing some research for a thesis.
Oh.
And I was like, this is awesome. I never get a call like this. Like, let's talk for 5 hours. Like, I realized how sad I was about having to do the thing I'm good at. And be like, let's talk about your crazy research idea. Lunatic, you know, this is great.
I love that.
It was awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. But see, the aspect
Give me something else.
So I think that also goes down to messaging, right? Obviously, when that person approached you, it made it sound like it was more of like a,
great point.
Let's talk about this as opposed to like, hey, I'm doing this project, or hey, I would love to interview you about your path to see where we have parallels and or where I can learn and maybe we can talk through some areas that I'm struggling with right now or something. So I kind of get an agenda would be great. So a lot of times I walk into conversations and I don't know what hat to wear. I just don't.
How do you, as you're visible, because you're getting approached by folks sort of like, I don't want to say downstream, but folks in the business who are on their way up, right? And are trying to get jobs. But you're also meeting everyone else, right? And you're meeting C-suite people, you're meeting other, and they probably give you feedback, both ask for and not ask for feedback. How do you manage that now that you know these folks are giving you tips?
Good question. I'm 100%. I love constructive criticism, feedback based on my talk. How can I improve my talk? How can I do X, Y, and Z differently? How could I have approached a conversation differently? I am a big fan of peer review. I'm a big fan of feedback, but constructive.
Yeah.
I would say, especially early on in my career, I mean, I was literally a lot of times the only woman speaker. And so I would say I've been attacked more than probably I could be. And sometimes I recently got a harsh review. I was a speaker and there's probably like 400 people in the room and I have all of this great, I mean, amazing. It was like five stars. I mean, all of this great feedback, like amazing feedback. People are like, where's her slides? I want this. Please, you know, bring her back again. And then I had this one guy write this paragraph and it was like,
Definitely a guy. 100%.
It's like, she sets back cybersecurity by 20 years and this and that. And it's like, and I'm like, okay. You know, the thing about that though is I was starting to run out of time. And so there was an area where I do this a lot. I somewhat rush at the end because I have so much to talk about. And so I did that portion, he was correct, but the rest I have to take out. So I think it's just like social media and the bullies that are behind social media and the keyboard warriors. It's listening, but not listening. It's taking what you can learn from it and growing, and also realizing that you're not everybody's cup of tea. You know, it is what it is, and that's okay. You're not supposed to be. I have a guy engineer who I will take with me many times, and I'll be like, remember this customer, when I'm going to say a lot of words and he's not going to hear me, and you're going to say those same words and he's going to hear it. And I'm not kidding. Nowadays, we'll go in and he'll be like, oh, that's that one guy, huh? He's like, I got your back. And so it's really interesting on how some of this works. And you just have to roll with it. Sadly, you have to smile and nod. I'm probably from a little bit of a different generation than the students that are in the room who I would say I would have taken offense to it early on. I don't want to say now I just know I have to live with it, but I obviously wasn't communicating the message right in some regard, and I will learn to overcome that. So it is what it is.
You can't please everybody, no, truly. All we can do is be the best versions of ourselves and share the knowledge we have. And, wow. Hey, I don't like that guy, but...
Well, so be the first or the last. It's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That is true. I know I feel like it takes a lot of confidence in yourself and a lot of, like, really knowing who you are to be able to pick and choose that, like, kind of feedback. How did you kind of, like, get to know yourself in that way? Was it from those bad or negative experiences that made you stronger, or like how did you really uncover
like
that? Yeah.
So the law firm I worked at for 14 years would offer us therapy. We just saw some really kind of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we had therapy was, my head partner said he could be the only narcissist in the room. So he gets therapy, everybody else gets therapy, right? It was like kind of Oprah. So therapy really was desensitized to me very early on. And I think right now, I don't have a therapist except for ChatGPT, future husband, version 8. But I actually think walking and kind of the gym time I have allows me to kind of work through, different potential problems that I'm having. I would say when I'm not doing that, then my sleep does get affected. So I think being able to balance maybe that physical energy immensely helps.
I relate to that so much. I really do. Absolutely. The physical activity and like just my stress is so tied to everything else. Like, absolutely. So I know you do a lot of events like this. You have the chance to talk to so many people. And you've said in the past that hallway conversations can sometimes be even more impactful than the keynotes. Can you open up a little bit on that? And like, is there one post-talk conversation specifically that really comes to mind for you?
While I love all the talks and I love all the speakers, I'm a speaker, so I get it. I do really believe the connections that you make outside, either with afterwards talking with the speaker or talking with your peer about what you just learned or just making that connection, is so vital to building your tribe and your community of interest, because you never know who it can help you in the future. You may meet somebody that's, say you're in security operations and they're in GRC, how maybe that GRC person can help with understanding compliance and the aspects of their job for them to understand maybe a little bit more of their capacity, or hearing a speaker talk about maybe a complex topic and be like, I got this, but I did not get that, right? And so being able to talk to others and open up to others, I think is just paramount, and it also allows you to build a community. And that's the cornerstone. I mean, we're all trying to fight bad actors every day. And so being able to take a couple of minutes to understand who else has that similar job or same job that you can rely on, because also you just don't know if that can be your next job, right? Or if they have any connections or, down the line, how that will work out. Because these groups are really small and kind of either different city-wise, they're small, or now with LinkedIn and in kind of the virtual world, globally, even kind of small. So being able to make those connections early on are really important. So I think for me, a lot of times it's helping people who come and speak to me after, like with maybe career path or questions about what I said. I feel like that's always my favorite portion. But
I'll say B-Sides does a really good job with making it easy here, right? Because of the village it's set up. And I know my, talk about fail fast, my fast failure at the soldering table did introduce me to a couple people that I probably would not have met.
EMS. I'm just kidding.
Correct. You dial 911 and then immediately dial the other one.
No, but I couldn't agree more. Also, this year at B-Sides, they have a thing called Unconference, where they're allowing people to do just quick lightning talks about, you know, something that's relevant to them or something that they just heard. And I think that that is so neat, as opposed to just having, you know, people who have submitted calls for paper. It's giving people a chance to speak in front of their peers. They could potentially put that on their resume. That's great. And they've got the soldering village, the Wi-Fi village, the capture the flag, the lock picking, and so much more. It's really great here.
Well, we're going to take a short break now. When we return, we will have the lifestyle polygraph.
Uh-oh. Right.
You're listening to the No Password Required podcast. We cover cybersecurity and a lot of other stuff.
Welcome back. As many of you know, the lifestyle polygraph is a test used by the federal government to determine if a person is worthy of learning some of our nation's most important secrets. Here, we use this technique for slightly lower stakes to determine whether our guest can join our fantasy cybersecurity squad. Gina, are you ready for the lifestyle polygraph?
Well, yeah, now it's okay. Part of the fantasy.
All right.
I thought I was literally about this is, to learn state secrets.
Yes, this is not quite, slightly lower stakes, okay? So, question number one, you've done roller derby. What was your derby name? What did it teach you about teamwork? And can you pretty much just tell me everything about your roller derby days, please?
So, I was going through a really bad breakup, so I joined roller derby in Tampa, Florida. I was a part of the Derby Darlings. I was in the Black Widow squad.
Cool.
And my name was Heaven Lee. Two words, okay? Two words, Heaven and then Lee. My name, my number was Ezekiel 87. I'm not here to remember, but it's basically the one that's cast great vengeance upon thee.
Oh
but
my goodness, what?
The
like from Pulp Fiction.
Version,
yeah.
Not the biblical version, like the Pulp Fiction.
What
like, think
17?
About that. Yeah, that's right.
So your number was the cast
Ezekiel,
vengeance upon thee.
So I did that for for 2 years, and then I was in a four-girl collision and had to get knee surgery.
Wow.
But honestly, really any type of sports, you know, I also did triathlon and CrossFit for a while. Like, I think as having some type of mental, you know, kind
yes.
of physical and mental, like, detox. And honestly, roller derby was super intense. It was actually, I used to leave there feeling like all of the stress of the world just would leave off of me. Because you'd be, like, two and a half hours, like, literally in a squat. We were, they're called quad killers. And just it rolling in circles
at
high speeds. So it was a lot of fun, but also it allowed you to think on your feet very quickly because you don't want to get hurt. Sadly, I got hurt, retired roller derby now. But it taught me a lot about one teamwork, of course, because you're in a team trying to either block the jammer or get your jammer through to get points and, but also strategy, slowing everything down when everything's moving so fast. But it was really fun, but yeah.
Oh my God.
Good due diligence.
I love this.
Scraping that off of the internet.
What was the crowd interaction like? Did you tune it out or were you aware of what the crowd was up to? Like, were you dialing them in?
That's a good question.
I think it depends, right? I think when the game actually starts, no. Okay. I think it's, I'm very focused. But no, when I was in the penalty box, of course, I would understand what the crowd was doing. And, you know, before the game or on the sidelines, definitely, you know, having a crowd and having a cheer squad is just always fun. And it was a really fun, you know, kind of 2 years of my life. Yeah.
What a good way to like find some connections, I'm sure, and like build that community a little bit. All right. So you're in the middle of a serious roller derby jam or any physical activity. Okay. And your favorite song hits, what is it and where else might it show up in your life?
Oh, yes. Okay. So I would say it's the AC/DC song, Knocking Me Out With Those American Thighs. So she shook me all night long, all day. You know, for me, this also would be my walkout song if I was, you know, a keynote or if I was getting married, because it works in many different ways, you know. and then also I built those thighs from roller derby, so I'm here for it. I'm totally here for
it. It's so fitting.
I have a personal deal that if an AC/DC song comes on the radio, you can't change it. You have to wait till it's over. It's just for respect purposes.
It's a solid rule.
That is totally justified and valid.
I agree.
But that is a fun song.
Those are healthy boundaries, Claudia, I think. All right. You're doing well so far, okay? So number three, you have said that you would dominate the Amazing Race. I definitely believe it too. Who would be your celebrity partner and what would your winning strategy look like?
I feel like you can go two ways on this, okay? So if I was going pure, I need like running partners and people that have like cardio in their background, it might be like one of the like, Peloton instructors, like Allie Love. Like she's got like really good energy. She's so positive. Cody Riggs, he's hysterical, but they're also like very endurance like kind of people. So I feel like I would be holding them back though. So, cause they're very fast and I'm half-assed, but doesn't matter. I would also say maybe somebody like, hold on. What's that guy from Hell's Kitchen? Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yeah. Pure motivator.
Like that would get you hyped.
Because like in a, cause he's a business person. He's high stakes environment. Yeah. So like he, I think could think on his feet and then also just yell at people into submission. So, and also, I mean, he is fit though.
I was going to say he's very fit.
So I might have to find an Oompa Loompa that would keep up with me. But yeah. I would say maybe those two.
Those are good. Those are good options. That's a good one to pull out, I think. Yeah.
The Peloton instructor is good to you because the producers of the show and the audience would like them, that they're used to performing a little bit, right? So they would be great for that, getting you excited, right? Bringing the best out of you. That's a great pick. I would love to see a reality TV show of Peloton instructors being put into situations and seeing how they do, right? Like, what are they like outside of, you know, being yelling at you and through a fitness apparatus? Like, what are they like? Follow them around the corner. Yeah. I feel like there's something here.
I think you're right.
I'm going to write a series of emails after this and let's see where we can get moving.
But honestly, my mom would say that she would like to be my partner. I know that my mom really she loves The Amazing Race. So I'll also throw my mom in there. So it's a choose your own adventure. I have to see what the season is.
Yeah.
I got to feel like how I'm feeling.
Yeah,
you know.
Feel it out for sure. All right, number four, the good people at Discovery have tapped you to create a show for Shark Week 2026. What's your concept? Where are you going? And can you tell me a little bit more about like your connection with sharks?
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with sharks. I know. It's like that in T-Rex. I don't know what it is. I'm obsessed with sharks. So I actually wanted to be an attorney at one point. But before I wanted to be an attorney, I wanted to be a marine science major. I'm from Florida. So, and I wanted my study to be shark research.
Okay.
And then I went to University of Miami and I maybe partied too hard my freshman year and maybe got a B or a C in biology, which that wouldn't be good for your master's and PhD. So then I started thinking, oh, what can I do next? And I really liked political science and, you know, that kind of area. So then I was thinking, oh, I'll go get my master's in public health or I do something like this. And then I was like, no, I'll go to law school once I started working at the law firm. And it just never worked out. I'm a product of my economy in that regard. But I just have love sharks. I've swam with a lot of different sharks.
Oh, wow.
It's just kind of I find them really, really fascinating, especially their importance in our ecosystem and things like that. So I do love sharks and Shark Week immensely. So being a part of Shark Week is just so cool. I'll do a twist on Shark Week because we have so much whaling and you know fishing in cybersecurity. So it'll be Cyber Shark or Shark Cyber, and where we can still go to really cool locations where sharks swim, like, you know, maybe visit the organized crime groups of like South
South
Africa, we could swim with the whale shark, but then also like interview like bad actors on the boat and then throw them in.
Shark.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Like, but also learn
wrong
about
answer.
Fishing.
They push them off. They play.
We can still learn about fishing and whaling, but in a different way.
We'd have to be in international waters, but I feel like you could get there on that boat. They would
no
be totally okay.
It's fine.
I'll write you a memo saying it's okay, a legal memo.
I'm just surrounded
this is
by
gonna
good
happen.
Ideas right now.
This is
like...
tremendous. We're going to do the amazing race.
That's what I'm saying.
People from Peloton do amazing race, and then we're going to like
this.
Kidnap, not kidnap, take for a ride really bad cyber criminals to known areas where there are sharks, and if they fall in and something bad happens, that's just nature's
that's
way of
problem.
Taking
survival
out the trash.
Yeah, Darwinism at its
absolutely.
Finest.
Absolutely.
And when you push them up, that'll be taking out the trash. We're going to come up with a catchphrase.
But you know what? Now with these AI videos, like, I mean, I feel like I can also just produce this.
That's
like,
true.
On my cell phone right
we
now.
Could at least just make them scared, you know?
100%.
Be afraid of
this
us.
This could happen.
This could, yeah.
But
so
I don't
watch
know, to
out.
Be like cyber shark, shark cyber. I don't know. We'll figure out something like that.
Yeah.
I think
idea.
It would be something fun.
You guys need to collaborate a little more often, I think. There
I'm
are
in.
Some beautiful
we're
ideas
coming up with
forming
some good
here.
Stuff here. Just spitballing.
It's a very important podcast right now.
All right. You have made it to the final question of the polygraph. So you can only choose one. You can have any movie character as your full-time assistant, or you get an extra 12 hours in your day, Harry Potter style. What is your pick and why?
Oh my gosh. So one, I did think these questions are going to be like cybersecurity, security plus, cispeak type of questions.
Welcome to
so
No this Password
is
Required.
Amazing. to have 12 more hours in my day is insane. But I'm already exhausted. So like maybe not. But that does sound like really I feel like I can like really conquer the world and do more. Having more hours in the day would be very intriguing. I'm like my first gut is like, I need Dobby as my assistant, but God, he's too silly. He's gonna annoy me after a while. And what was it? It was any celebrity?
Let's see. Any movie character.
Movie
character.
Movie
I
character.
Like the idea of Dobby, though.
Hold on. John Wick.
Oh,
that's awesome.
I like dogs. He likes dogs.
Yeah, he does.
He can hurt people that I'm mad at.
That's true.
However, he also is calm under pressure and is sympathetic. So it's like the only he's after the bad guys. So I feel like he's very organized. Sometimes irrational, but I feel like he would keep my calendar really good.
Yes.
Also, he's very intelligent, like very intelligent. So he could not, unlike Dobby, like write an email and things like that. So
may not be Dobby's specialty, unfortunately.
So Keanu Reeves, all day. Keanu Reeves. He's tall. He's like that bodyguard.
Yeah.
Like an amazing race person, too.
That wouldn't hurt.
I know. He's a good-looking man.
Take over as your ChatGPT husband, maybe?
Well, he's married, so we don't want it to start
right,
like
no,
true
that's fair.
Marriage. They've been together for a very long time.
Okay, you're right.
But he is still good to look at. I can get that written by his wife, I'm sure. Like, you can still look at my husband. But I do think that there's a lot of... And actually, I guess it's the character, John Wick. So that lady died, okay?
Oh, that's
right?
True.
So like, okay, we're on a
She's
different...
Gone.
Yeah, this is a character.
You might
character.
Be ready for love.
Yeah.
You might be ready.
We're talking totally different scenarios now. But if it's a character, maybe John Wick.
Okay.
This is a rando question. A Peloton instructor. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. John Wick with the thighs of a Peloton instructor.
Yes.
We've constructed... I like it. I like it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, Jack, what do you think? Does she have what it takes to join our fantasy squad?
Yeah, I think Gina plus the avatar of John Wick with the thighs.
Yeah, plus the sharks.
Can be our marine cyber biologist on the fantasy cybersecurity team. So welcome to the fantasy cybersecurity team.
Thank you. What an honor. Oh.
Gina, thank you so much for joining us. If our listeners want to follow you or connect with you, how can they do that?
So I'm on LinkedIn for sure. Spoke signals and interpretive dance are preferable. So I do like that. But yeah, just connect with me after this meeting. We can find other ways in terms of like my email or phone number. But easiest way is LinkedIn, of course.
And be respectful when you reach out. Don't ask for an 11-hour meeting. You know, please keep it tight.
And know that I get hundreds of emails per day.
Yeah, so make it good.
That brings us to the end of the show. Gina, thank you so much for joining us, listeners and live audience. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
For the entire No Password Required team, I'm Jack Klabbe, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to the No Password Required podcast. Join us next time for more with your favorite cybersecurity personalities. In the meantime, consider liking, subscribing, and sharing this episode. You can find us on social media at No Password Pod. The show is produced by Cyber Florida, and a special thanks goes out to our friends at Carlton Fields and Reality Shift. For more information, visit our website at cyberflorida.org/pod.